everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. Now, I have a wonderful program for you today. Aging issues hit all of us, with some people coming to fear aging as early as their 20s. But aging is not about a chronological number, because if we're negative and pessimistic, we can feel older than our years. But when we're positive and radiant, these qualities contribute to looking and feeling more vibrant. My guest today is Dr. Carla Marie Manley, a clinical psychologist, wellness expert, and author of the new book, Aging Joyfully. Now, in her new book, Dr. Manley takes the reader on a soulful adventure into self-awareness, looks at the anxiety and depression that our youth-centered culture is creating, and discusses how to notice, understand, and face aging with grace and strength. For more information about Dr. Carla or her books, go to drcarlamanley.com. Welcome to the program, Dr. Carla. It's so great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Terry. It's a joy. Thank you.
Absolutely. I like that. Aging joyfully. It's such a joy. Now, you live in Sonoma County, California. I have to tell you, one of my favorite places to visit. It is so amazingly beautiful there. So tell us, what kinds of clients you see in your practice as a clinical psychologist?
Well, I specialize in anxiety, depression, PTSD. The other focus of my work is in relationships. And also, there's, interestingly, a large segment of women in their 40s and 50s and men who come to me because they're reaching a space in their life, in their relationship, whether they're single or, they're married or partnered, where they're really reevaluating who they are and what they want in life, if they want to stay married, if they want to remarry, if they want to partner up. So it's a time when I really watch people evolve and question.
And go through that transition, it sounds like, and perhaps due to aging. And is that why you wrote the book, Aging Joyfully?
Yes. Partly because of, working with my publisher, and they knew that the timing was right for this book, that it's really with the baby boomers coming to look at their lives and evaluate their lives. And it mirrors what I've seen in my clinical practice, in my women's group that I run, in the various ways that I work in with the public. And I find that people, as their children, and my life followed this same flow, as the children grow and they're turning 15, 16, 17, and you're realizing, wait a second, my role as a mother, as a wife, as a partner is really changing dramatically. This piece of my life is going to be very different. What do I want my life to look like? And men and women are both organically starting to look at this. Some cover it up and, have a midlife crisis, so to speak, and don't really get to the roots of it and cover it up with a new car, a new partner, an affair or something like that. Yet other people are really starting to take it seriously, which is why Aging Joyfully is so powerful, because it says, yes, embrace this time. It's different. It's challenging. But embrace it.
Right. Embrace it. Well, I know you talk about that in your book, that relationships do change as we grow older. And I have to tell you, listeners, that I loved reading Dr. Carla's book. I really enjoyed the wisdom tips and strategies in each of the chapters. They're so helpful. They're so practical. But let's start with what you were just talking about then, Dr. Carla. You know, that as we grow older, our relationships do change. Our our roles do change. And you note in the book, and as you just said, that we need to embrace those changes. How do we do that? How do we embrace the changes in our marital or life partner relationships, or even within our parent-child relationships?
I think the first step to embracing, Dr. Terry, I mean, you went right to the heart of it, which is, you know, that's typically you. You dive right into it.
Right into it.
How do you embrace something truly? The first step to that is to pause, to evaluate, to become self-aware. Otherwise, we move through mindlessly, letting life take us. And so if we're not aware, how can we embrace? It's like going on a morning walk and just being blind. How can you embrace that day if you're not slowing down to be aware of what's around you? In the same way, whether it's a marital relationship, a relationship with, you know, growing children or adult children, each aspect of those relationships, we have to slow down and say, okay, let's say we're working with a marital relationship, mm-hmm. and we say, you know, I'm feeling out of touch with my partner. Now that the kids are gone, I don't really know who this person is. Let me slow down and figure out what in me I need to work on, what in the relationship I need to work on, and what I'd want from my partner. And then through that process, we can come to embrace what our gifts are, what our needs are, what our growth needs to be, what it, perhaps the relationship needs to shift, and perhaps what we might ask of the partner. And through that, can you see how then we can come to embrace it and feed it and love it and nurture it rather than disposing of it? Or just accepting it as being a dead relationship and saying, well, life is not going to get better than this. Mm-hmm. In the same way with our relationships with our children, whether they're heading off to college or they're, you know, in partnerships and thinking about having grandchildren or bringing grandchildren already into the world, then we can look at that and say, well, this isn't my infant or my teen anymore, but this is an autonomous, beautiful individual. And then really looking at that, looking at how you want the relationship to be, and then moving in that direction. And again, I think it's about being aware, mindful, grateful. And when we are in those spaces, that is where embracing something really happens.
Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of people come to me, Dr. Carla, and say, I don't want change. Right? I don't like change at all. I want things to stay the same. What do you tell those people? Because as you're saying right now, and your book is all about, is that change is inevitable.
I agree with you. It's the same in my practice where people come and they're change resistant. And I understand that, right? From a very primitive level, we don't like change. We right. like homeostasis. It makes us feel safe. Yet the truth is, change is happening every day, every minute, all around us. We can be blind to it. We can pretend it's not happening. Or we can say, which is the truth, change is a part of life. I can either be a partner in the change, I can work with the change and be aware of the change, or I can be a victim of the change and feel helpless and powerless. Me, I would prefer to be proactive and aware, and that's what I work with my clients on, being proactive and aware, and that way you're a partner with the change.
Right. So I'm taking control. So really embracing is empowering myself as well. I like that. So don't be a victim of change. Be a proactive person, a partner with the change. And another question that I get is, you know, when I sit down, like you said, I pause, I become self-aware about how my relationships are changing and what I am doing, what my relationship is changing like, and how what I want from my partner, do I talk to my partner and make that other person a partner in the change as well, Dr. Carla? Or do I take it upon myself to do the self-awareness and the change alone?
I believe that part of partnership with another human being, whether it's, you know, our husband, our fiance, boyfriend, wife, you know, whomever, is that in relationships, we want to stay communicative. We want to consistently up-level ourselves and help our partners up-level. And so to me, it's almost a rhetorical question of how can that happen if there isn't a dialogue? Mm-hmm. And of course, sometimes the dialogue needs to be first with the self, which is why in Aging Joyfully, as you noted, some of the wisdom tips really help a person dive into self-reflection, whether it's writing a letter to the self on a certain topic, because how can I be aware, how can we be aware of what we want and how we want to unfold if we don't really dive inward first? And then once we have that awareness, or at least a fledgling level of awareness, then we can go to our partner and say, hey, this is what I'm envisioning for my future. You know, I'm about to retire. I'm thinking about a job shift, or really want to partner up with you on a relationship shift. Let's talk about this. How can we work together as a team? You know, and then even through that dialogue, I don't know about you, but for me, when I dialogue with my husband or a dear friend, I learn about myself through the dialogue because I'm hearing myself speak, I'm getting feedback, and it's the same when somebody's bringing their issues to me. You know, it's that back and forth that helps us more fully understand who we are.
Right, absolutely. And that dialogue, what they bring to us or me, what my husband brings to me, for example, then I can look at or become aware of how I respond to what he's saying. So let's delve into that self-awareness a little bit more. We went from our relationships changing, but now let's look back to us. And you write in the book that for most people, the idea of change or aging feels unpleasant. It's challenging. And believe me, honestly, I agree with you, Carla. It's challenging to experience and even think about aging and the changes that occur. You talk a lot about a youth-centered culture and that being responsible for a lot of our challenges. Tell us more about what you think about that youth-centered culture or ageism that you discuss in the book.
Okay. So when I look at the way our culture is, we tend to see an 17, 18, 19-year-old female or male as the epitome of attractiveness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that's long held through many cultures, you know, eons and eons. Yet, what other cultures did that we don't do in the past is they also revered the elders. They also had, you know, the maiden and then the mother and then the crone, right? And right. They revered the crone, the older woman, for the gifts that she brought, the wisdom and the intelligence. In our very heavily youth-centered culture, we almost bypass now the importance of the motherhood stage. We almost, and we certainly ignore the beauty of that crone stage. In fact, in writing Aging Joyfully, it was one of the few things that the publisher had me change. I used the word crone, and they said, people won't understand it. They'll think it's negative. And I think, oh my God, the crone is the wise fairy godmother. She is the wonderful sage, you know, that how could we, but so I switched it. And, but again, the energy is still there. So how do we get to that place again in our culture? It is about noticing this trend of ageism that once we hit, I hear women in their late 20s telling me, I don't feel relevant anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, this new generation coming up. Then I hear that theme more in 30s, 40s, definitely in 50s, where people are afraid that they're not relevant anymore, they're not beautiful anymore. And so to me, then when that starts happening, we enter into what I term the world of self-ageism. We unconsciously begin participating in that idea where, you know, women walk into my office and say, I'm not important anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the more we repeat something, be it good or not so good, the more we come to believe it. And so I really sense that if women band together to start noticing this trend, this very destructive, toxic trend, and realize that there is truly great power in being in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and starting to embrace that and fight back a little, so to speak, not in a negative way, but in a really productive way of saying, wait a second, I'm in my 50s. I might not be in the same place I am at work, but I am very relevant. These are the gifts I can bring to the community. Mm-hmm. I'm in my 60s. These are the gifts I can bring to myself and the community, and then get busy doing it.
And so practically, what do I do then to feel relevant and to band together and to fight back? I mean, one of the things you talk about is writing down a list, right, of the strengths, of the regrets, of looking at what I can appreciate. Give listeners some suggestion, because as I hear you saying that, I'm like, yes, yes, okay. But now... the listener is going, okay, but how do I do that?
Okay. How you do it is, here's the beauty of being older. In your 30s and 40s, 20s, 30s, 40s, you are so wrapped up in making money, in taking care of the kids, in getting a career going, you know, whatever it is, that you don't have time to breathe. You don't have time to figure out who you are. So in your 50s and your 60s and your 70s, whatever the timing is for you, this is not a downhill slide. This is just another journey where you can start slowing down and saying, okay, of all the things I wasn't able to do, what do I want to do now? Do I want to set up a little side business? Do I want to become, you know, a volunteer in something that's really important to me? Do I want to work with children? Do I want to work with elders? What do I want to do? Do I want to write a book? Do I want to start a little company that's making, you know, lotions and foot cream and, you know, whatever it is. So looking at it as an opportunity, Dr. Taylor.
I like that. Not as a downhill, but as an opportunity. And that's wonderful because, you know, we don't spend enough time really thinking about what do we want to do next. And no matter what the age you're suggesting, we can ask ourselves that and do it.
Absolutely. I have a client who has been very, very busy with most of his life. This is, you know, parallel with many women, but it's a man. And he kept saying to me, you know, but I don't feel purposeful outside of, you know, my work and my pursuits with my friends. And I said, how about volunteering? Well, it took him a while, but he eventually set up to volunteer with an animal rescue place. And he does now. Every Saturday, he goes in and he does the laundry. And this is a man who has amazing degrees, amazing person. And he goes in and does the laundry for the bedding for the dogs.
Wow.
And that is his contribution. And he says, and they're working me up. Someday I'll be able to walk the dogs.
Right, exactly.
He's getting so much joy.
Oh, so much joy. You know, I have to share a personal story about my husband as well, Dr. Carla, who is in IT and websites and softwares and computers and has done so very well in his own business, sat down a few years ago and asked the same kind of question that you're suggesting that we all do and listeners do and said, what do I really want to do? I'm not giving back. And now works one day for a full day every single week as a transporter in the hospital, transporting patients from ER to tests and from one room to another. And that brings him joy as he's aging. So it just popped in my head as you were telling about your client. Same kind of thing. You know, what do we really want out of life? And you're right. When we get into our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, we can slow down and ask those questions.
Now, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's turn as well, Dr. Carla, to aging and our bodies. You know, we've been focused on relationships and on ourselves and what we want to do and psychology and not feeling relevant. You provide in one chapter some great healthcare tips and strategies and the tests that we need to do, medical tests. But you also suggest some other wisdom tips to appreciate us as we mature physically. Share some of those tips.
So I think that the primary tip that I'd like to share with listeners is exercise. Mm-hmm. And we hear it again and again, eat right and exercise. Yet one of the most important things for cognitive, you know, flexibility and strength is a corresponding element in the physical realm where we keep our flexibility and our fitness going, and we're, you know, elevating our feel-good neurochemicals as we're exercising. And research shows that even 12 minutes of a walk per day is enough to elevate one's mood. And so that's one of the things I really encourage in that chapter, is your physical wellness, your overall physical wellness, body, mind, you know, together will do far better in the long run if you take a walk every day, if you do some sort of cardio, even low-level activity, if you challenge your balance by, you know, walking on a little bit of uneven pavement with possible or uneven surfaces, that those are some of the things, and watching what you eat, taking that seriously. Because we cannot control that we are aging, but we can control how we age. We can right. control how well we take care of the body.
Right. I love that. We can't control aging, right? But we can control how we respond to it, how we react to it. And I love that suggestion of exercise and the mind-body connection. And listeners, just so you know, and I always say this again and again, that exercise with your partner as well for those 12 minutes really improves relationships as well. That arousal, that adrenaline, really can get transferred to your partner and your relationship. So not only is it good, Dr. Carla, for mind body and responding to aging and change, but it's also good for your relationship.
Now, absolutely. And I just want to add on, if yes. you don't have a partner, this is a really good opportunity to form a collective with other women. Start a hiking club, start a walking club, start, you know, something. Ask people. Put it on, you know, a meetup site in your community. But if you enjoy exercising with others, there are groups out there. Find them, you know, connect with other women, and you will feel the benefits.
Absolutely.
You know, two things happening at once, connecting with women and also exercising. It's
I like
lovely.
That. It is lovely. What a great suggestion. Very good. Now, we only have a few minutes left. Are there any last comments that you'd like to share with our listeners today about aging joyfully? Any messages that I didn't ask you about?
I really, you hit some of the most beautiful points, and we, you know, delved into a lot of the intimate pieces. And what I would actually like to leave listeners with on top of all of that is take the time to get to know who you are today, and then look forward. Who do you want to be in a year, in 5 years? In 10 years. Be mindful of that. Be mindful of how you want to blossom, because you're not, your leaves aren't falling off. You know, you are blossoming. Be mindful of the way you want the rose of your own being to blossom, and go for it.
I like that. Go for it. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Carla. Even in those last words, you calmed my body and spirit. I could ask you questions all day. It's such a pleasure to talk with you.
It has been a joy and a pleasure, and I'm so grateful for you and your listeners. Have a most beautiful day, Dr. Terry.
Thank you so much. And listeners, if you want to connect with Dr. Carla Marie Manley, or you want more information about her book, Aging Joyfully, which I highly recommend, I really enjoyed reading, please go to drcarlamanley.com. And as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, the Love Doctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.